Rump steak. Purged aubergine.
Yes.
Egg. Frittata. Ah, trick question. That's an asthmatic rattlesnake. Okay. Vinyl.
What's cooking on 95 BFM?
That's right, it is that time of the week where we kind of get treated, don't we, John, to a guest selection, and it sort of gets us out of our bounds. And we also get to catch up with a notable person, it seems, just about every week. And this week it's Wallace Chapman. Welcome. Back.
Great to be here. Back. Sorry, man, I'm just buzzing. That door with the stickers and the carpet and the back entrance.
It's still got real estate down the bottom.
Does the buzzer still work?
Yes, it does.
Yes, yeah. It works. Yeah. Yeah. Something still happens here at BFM. The buzzer still fucking works.
You can still get in.
It's great.
I'm sorry that Shadows is shut at the moment. There wasn't spew all up and down the stairs.
Yeah.
But, hopefully another day there will be when you come.
What's with the Shadows door? It was closed. Is it still in operation? Is it, yeah?
Shadows is sort of definitely closed. More closely tied to the university timetable now. So now it's holidays, they just basically shut up for Christmas.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think they did that in the past. I think they sort of still had enough weekend trade.
Exactly.
Night trade.
Yeah, but no, it's wonderful to be here.
Right on.
Now, Wallace, you're ex-BFM. When did you first get involved with BFM?
I got involved in BFM because I was working for 5 years, Radio 1, as the creative director. And, it was a station I sort of chanced across, got involved in, and I just loved it. And it was about 5 years, and the big thing about BFM, still is, but especially at the time, mid-90s, was the strong creative policy, huh? Mm-hmm. You know, and so I was writing ads at Radio 1. You'd have the sort of tapes come down to Radio 1 from Bob Kerrigan and Scott Kelly, who are the sort of the genius ad writers at the time, and I go, shit, these ads are great. So I'd kind of write in the style of B ads.
Yes. Cool.
And then I'd sort of go online, I'd listen to BFM, and it was just, as it is now, just such an iconic station. So you'd kind of emulate a bit of that. And then one night I got a phone call from the manager of BFM at the time and say, look, you know, we're trying to find a creative director, we're searching around Auckland, but we've heard your ads, would you be keen to come back to Auckland and try out? I said, you're kidding me, for B.
You had already kind of modelled your vibe, so yeah. It's spot on.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a text in saying you made the best ads earlier.
Oh,
so there you go.
Thank you to my my bros there, to Uncle Richard or whatever it is. But no, it was a really great time. And so I flew up, and I can recall very, very clearly the meeting with four, who was there? Dubhead and Aaron Carson and Suze and Dan Sperber, who was the creative director at the time. And holy shit, I got the job. And, you know, so I was here for 5 years. Every single day, I absolutely loved it. It was just rocking.
Who did you work? Who was producing the ads at the time? Was it Richard?
It was
Tony Stan.
No, they came a bit after. But I worked with Richard because I was a creative director, and Richard Larson, who still has a show here, him and I were sort of joined at the hip. You know, he was the creative senior writer, so we sort of started this little lounge, and we wanted to have a bit of a vibe ourselves because we were coming after a time at B where the ads were so strong, like they're just one of these, all these awards for years. Mm. How can we stamp our own sort of style for 5 years? So we decided, there was a salesperson at the time called Murray Hood, and goes, hey, mate, what mother? Well, here's your brief, but first, why don't you call this the Guava Lounge? I thought, Guava Lounge? What a crazy Hawaii 5-0 name, you know? So we decided to rope the place off, put these Hawaiian shirts, and, you know, my dad's from the islands, so we've got some tarpa cloth, you know, and we did a vibe. We had an opening. Who can we get as the who's the A-list celebrity in Auckland to come in and cut the ribbon for the Guava Lounge? And Richard and I both looked at each other and went, I know, Peter Ehrlich. a lot of the listeners now might not know who that is, but he was a big deal at the time, and he had a show. Does he still have a show? Nice Ehrlich.
On George,
but it was very BFM at the time, and like it was huge. So he sort of with his entourage came up and cut the ribbon, and it was 5 years of great fun. Yeah, it was very, very cool. Fantastic. Great memories. Great memories, Johnny.
Now, Wallace, we have given you a brief to bring in some music. What do you want to start off with?
You know what? I've been sort of, I can't compete with you guys who play the next to new because
That's the whole point of this.
Yes, exactly. But you've been smashing the last couple of days that I've been listening. But I just want to go back to some stuff that I love, and I can recall this time in Radio 1, and it was mid 90s, and a guy called Richard Wayne, who was the programmer at the time, he brought in this new jungle music, and it was Goldie, and it was a beautiful album called Timeless, and to my mind, it is timeless. It hasn't aged. It's never aged. And it is a track with State of Mind. The vocalist is Lorna Harris, and it's from a person who's just won an awarded an MBE about sort of 3 years ago. He's an iconic English figure. Goldie's the name. State of Mind, Timeless is the album. Here we go.
Oh,
Delish.
Delish, delish, delish. Goldie. Yeah, it's just you know, I just feel he... It sort of sums up a sort of London in a great era. You know, the creativity that was London at the time, mid-90s. And that album for me has kind of never gone away. It's quite weird. I was never a big drum and bass fan. In fact, not at all. But just this... I don't know, Goldie is that... And the voice.
This just has a bit of space to it, you know? It's not too aggressive.
You are exactly right, yeah. But that doesn't sound... The album's very dark. But right, this is right. that is the most tuneful one on the...
Very nice.
The old Goldie album.
Now, Wallace, just out of interest, as a man who's done a mixture of TV and radio, do you have a preference for either medium?
No, not particularly. But the sort of... It's quite weird. The sort of TV that I have done... Is kind of very radio oriented. It's very ad lib, and it's very, you know, so it's not a structured sort of model in a way.
Kind of live as well.
It's very live. So it's very much radio on the TV. So I did a show. It was in a pub called Backbenchers, Pub Politics, for a decade.
Now, did you have to? Were you based in Wellington?
I was based in Auckland, and I used to fly down every Wednesday. To do the show live in a bar called the Backbencher Tavern, an iconic politics pub.
Right.
And at the time, it was, in fact, to this day, it was an extraordinary, unique show, because never had we had a show that was live in a bar with sitting members of Parliament. I mean, it doesn't happen around the world.
When you say a politics pub, is it just like close to the Beehive? And it's, I'm imagining like a Shorten Street situation where there's one bar that everyone goes to.
Yeah, sort of. Exactly. That's the one. Yeah, but it's kind of, you've got these puppets all around the wall. So you have puppets of, you know, Matiri Ture and Horny Harawira and Rodney Hyde. And the puppets were quite famous in the 80s. Right. There was a big puppet show. Someone will text us what their puppet show was called.
I know
called.
Exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, Grunty.
Not gliding on, but something else. Spitting Image. Nice. And so it was Every city has a politics pub. So London has the Red Lion, Canberra has something else. So
where's the Auckland politics pub?
Well, Auckland is not a politics place, really.
Okay.
No, there's not a... it's not a political scene.
Boats and
Sky
Rugby.
City Convention Centre.
The Sky yeah, very good.
Down by the 5 cent pokey machines.
The Sky City Convention Centre is our politics pub. I mean, a very big pub. That's what I did, and I do a bit of TV, but mainly radio. So what do I prefer? Radio is, Johnny, look, it's something I've been doing for 23 years nonstop, and I love it.
Sick.
Absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Hey, let's jump into this next
tune. I said fantastic as well.
it's nice to hear.
John Lennon.
Yeah, John Lennon is a funny one, because I can recall a big memory for me was 1980, breaking news, and I was about sort of 7 or 8.
Right.
We interrupt this program. This has actually happened.
Oh, man.
We interrupt this program to tell you that John Lennon has been shot dead.
Brilliant.
And Mum came running through from the kitchen and said, Mum, who's John Lennon? I said, Wallace, he was in a band called The Beatles. Any good? And she rolled her eyes. Anyway, I became a sort of fan and a follower of The Beatles. But this particular album, Mind Games, is an extraordinary album for many reasons. It was acclaimed. There was a top 200 album best of put out sort of some years ago by an extraordinary reviewer called Paul Gabaccini. And Mind Games was right up there. And this is a really...
I don't know this too, so I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's an acclaimed album. Okay. And this is perhaps one of his lesser known songs. It's just pure, 100% John Lennon in a way that you would not know. And it's called Out the Blue.
Out the blue, life's energy.
old mate John Lennon right there.
Oh, yes, Mind Games. Mind Games, very, very cool. Kind of a classic in a way, but as I said, it's just one of those albums that, you know, every single song is not a hit.
Yes, I was just saying that. It's kind of like a great team.
Yeah, totally. It's like a B-side, but just again, highly acclaimed. And one of his greats, you know. And so from the time he was shot dead, you know, I became a big fan of... I wanted to know why Mum was so upset.
That's quite fascinating.
Yeah. And then it, you know, so happened. The second sort of breaking news was shot by Mark Chapman. And I said, Mum, any relation?
Fuck.
And Mum again rolled her eyes and said, I don't know, Wallace. And said, well, we should find out. Why don't I write Mark a letter saying what you did was a terrible thing?
How many degrees of separation? Did you ever get to the bottom of it?
Well, we kind of knew because the Chapman family, the Chapman side is from Fiji. You know, they're Fijian, you know.
Right,
so,
right.
It would have been very rare.
Great integration.
Yeah.
Now, Wallace, you've got the show on Sunday on RNZ. Have you had any highlights from, you know, doing the show there? Any particular interviews that you've really enjoyed that...
Oh, I don't know.
It's
kind of like you guys, you know. It's like you just have your you'll have your big names, you know. You will have your like you, you know. You'll have your big names. You know, have your sort of oh my god, you know, your personal fan and stuff.
Mm.
Do you get to do many personal fans sort of thing? You know, like a couple of months in the pipeline, teeing it up, getting the person actually
on
the phone.
Oh, absolutely. And there's one track I will play that your listeners might. Turn off in horror, but he was a big fan of mine, and I'll keep that to the end.
Sweet.
He's a huge fan of mine. He's fucking huge. I was buzzing. He's a guitarist.
Okay.
He's a guitarist that played on Beat It by Michael Jackson. He's a really big name. Do you want to play it now?
Well, I guess you're kind of like talking about it.
All right, let's pump it. So,
are we going to talk about how Wallace has brought up his personal collection of CDs?
Okay,
the highest fidelity available.
All right, so let's talk about this in terms of. So who?
Oh snap! Okay.
Who was a favorite outside of this guy? A few weeks ago, I interviewed a guy. What it's track 3, I think it is.
Okay, cool. Shit! Is there any other track on this record?
I'll talk about that really soon. I'll talk about it really soon. But there's a guy I was really nervous about interviewing. I don't know, but he is a filmmaker who's my favourite filmmaker of all time. I mean,
Jim Jarmusch.
Pardon?
Jim Jarmusch.
No, but I love him. I love him.
Stanley Kubrick.
No, but he passed away. But that would have been weird. But this guy here did Elephant, My Own Private Idaho, all these great iconic Good Will Hunting he did with Matt Damon, and his name's Gus Van Zandt.
Oh, yeah.
And he's known because he doesn't talk much. In fact, he really talks of a man of very few fucking words.
Wow.
Really few words. He's like this Yoda on the mountain who doesn't relate to Hollywood.
Is that like a trust in the actor or what's that?
Oh, he's just... everyone thinks of him as an icon. So I was very, very nervous about how it went down. And true to form, he didn't say a lot. It wasn't a great interview.
That's when you have to know your stuff, really.
But I got to talk to Gus Van Zandt. Now, this guy I'm going to talk about, he is a guitarist. His name is Steve Lukather. He is from a band called Toto. Now, Toto, don't turn BFM off.
Stay with us.
This song really puzzles me because it's become a bit of a millennial anthem. So much so that Weezer did an extraordinary version of the song we're about to play. For whatever reason, I see this as the golden triangle of music. For whatever reason, the sum of its parts lend into this circular hole. The gravity of the song makes sure that every single person, whether you're listening in the car, or at home, on the dance floor, will unite as one. It is, it is my favorite song of all time, and this is the song.
Embrace the eye contact, everyone.
Thank you.
hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, "Hurry, boy, it's waiting there for you. They grow restless, longing for some solitary company. I know that I must do what's right, sure as Kilimanjaro rises like Olympus above the Serengeti. I seek to cure what's deep inside, frightened of this thing that I've become.
Get all uppity, everyone. Apparently, Otis Harding used to cover this song live.
There
so.
You go, there you go. There has been a storm. Has there not a storm
yes,
of protests?
It's been going either way,
shocking,
though.
Shocking, shocking. Look, I've got to tell you, though, you asked me who... I mean, I was just buzzing. Steve Luca, by the way, a big shout-out to my friend Simon Farrell-Green, who says only you could get away playing Toto on the Bee, Wallace. But people forget, and I think that, Johnny, you made a very good point, that the backing musicians of great artists don't get enough time. Now, Quincy Jones asked Toto to be the backing band of the greatest album of all time, which was Thriller. So Toto penned Human Nature on Thriller. Steve Lukather, who came up with that song, was the guitarist who went ding 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 ding. Yeah, so, you know, these guys aren't talentless, but is it a cheesy song? Yes, but it stands the test of time.
It's immaculate. It's immaculate.
It's immaculate. It's flawless. It's a cake.
If you
it's
don't
cake.
Like that, it's kind of like hating reggae. It's like, come on, what's the problem?
Totally.
What's the problem?
Yeah. Reggae
relax.
Night.
No,
what's
no, not
to,
that one.
What's, yeah, what's to hate about that song? Hey, Johnny. We're not going to play it.
I do like fuck you as a text as well. That's
yeah, well, you know.
That's a good one. So I don't know if that's...
Go back to Twitter.
No, I think that's fuck you, go. For, like, that's great.
Oh,
I mean,
fantastic.
Someone's like, fuck you, you got me. Like, they're having, like, one ear, one tight, one
yeah,
little
yeah, actually, you cry. You know, you're sitting in Auckland traffic going, I want Toto.
People
you know?
Are feeling something. That's all you want out of radio.
She's
really.
Coming in 12:30 flight. You know, as soon as Kilimanjaro rises, but like the Olympus of Serengeti, whatever it is.
Now, Wallace, what else have you brought in on these magical CDs?
Well, this is a bit of a BFM story, Johnny, in a sense. So here I was doing the breakfast when I was at BFM, and I was having a little bit of a chat too. And provenance for me is important because I love getting recommended music.
Yes.
And this is BFM was par none for getting recommended music. So anyway, Graham Reed. Reviewer goes out and he comes back in and he hands me a CD and a book and never heard of these cats. Oh, whatever. Bit of a Americana. Anyway, I got to love this band. It's a band called Richmond Fontaine.
God, I love that word Fontaine. I wish that was my last
name.
You won't hear
many people have heard about this band. They've done about 7 or 8 albums, but they are gold. They write the new iteration of the great American songbook.
Okay.
Now, Willie Vlorton, the singer-songwriter, has gone on to become a great Americana novelist. Portland, Oregon band.
Interesting.
But very, very cool, highly acclaimed.
You've chosen the longest song on the whole record.
It's about 3.5
minutes. The title.
Yeah, well, the titles are long, you know, so they come from that Bob Dylan aspect of sort of telling a story in a song. Very, very cool indeed. So, Graham Reed, if you have been listening.
Is it laden with metaphors?
It's a good question, actually. I'm not quite sure. But this but this song is called $87 in a Gilly Contest. What he writes about, it's just tales of working class Midtown America.
Cool.
And it's a beautiful band. Richmond Fontaine's the band. Very, very cool song. And here it is.
What?
Very nice. I feel like that might be the musicians' band kind of thing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. No, it's the musicians, precisely. Yeah, Richmond Fontaine is the band. Willie Lawton is the singer-songwriter. And from the New American Songbook. Very, very cool indeed. Yep. The Providence back here at BFM when I was, you know, doing the show, and check this out. Yeah.
Now, what's on the horizon for Wallace Chapman? Wallace Chapman.
I do have something to you'll have to watch the space, Johnny. Okay. I can't say anything too much right now. There is something happening, but I am staying at RNZ, and I've been there nearly 5 years. Okay. And I love it. I absolutely love it. So from BFM, I went to Kiwi FM for a couple of years,
yep,
and then to Radio Live, and then I got a job at Radio New Zealand.
I feel like RNZ is just going through this huge renaissance of sorts. Is that the case?
Well, it's kind of funny because I grew up with the station, so I've been listening to it since I was 19. But I think there was a when I came on in 2014, there was a sense that it needed to change, and change quite fast, because it was seen as, I don't know, sort of a kind of a stuck in a track, perhaps, stuck in a route. Since then, we've had a whole raft of amazing broadcasts have come on, the likes of, I don't know, people like Jesse Mulligan and Guy Nespina, Susie Ferguson, who've really, Karen Hay, who've kind of invigorated and amped the station, you know. It's and also, too, a little less precious about... Right. About the sacred cows of broadcasting, because it was always, RNZ was always the sort of the proper station,
right? Yeah,
and with that you can sometimes be a bit impenetrable. Mm-hmm. But with someone like me, who as a broadcaster is very improper in the sense that, for example, I ad-lib a lot, pronunciation is not the best, I stutter quite a bit, you know. Mm. So I couldn't even believe when I got the job. But
I think it's something to do with also the people are kind of just wanting a bit, something a bit more honest, you know, and that kind of is what RNZ represents to me.
You are absolutely right.
I don't want to
right.
say the word fake news, but, you know, there's a lot of bullshit around, a lot of really short little things that you'll just read on the internet.
You've kind of hit it on the head.
Yeah.
So
like long form's kind of coming back, you know.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
don't want the edited stuff, they want people would actually sort of nut stuff out in a bit of a discourse.
You couldn't be more right. Yeah. So where the likes of RNZ has really succeeded is those long, long form interviews of half an hour, often 40 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
But that is replicated across the world where, for example,
well, podcasts are ripping at the moment.
Podcasts, yeah. But also what might be seen as the credible mainstream media like the New York Times,
yep,
the Guardian and the Washington Post are going through a huge resurgence.
They're freaking out though, as well. Like,
yes, they are, but they're going through a big resurgence in the era of Trump.
Right.
In the era of what they
clickbait
and fake news.
Yeah.
People want a media environment that they can at least trust, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in a sense, I see BFM as part of that, because what BFM has got authenticity in spades. You know, people trust it, you know? It's a very cool station.
Right on.
All right.
That's my plug.
Speaking of very
anyway,
cool, you're going out on kind of the coolest that there is.
Wait, just before we go out, do you want to give us a voice ID, Wallace?
Yeah,
don't forget about the voice ID.
We'll gas this down, we'll isolate the microphone.
All right. I'm Wallace Chapman, and you are listening to the one and only BFM Drive.
Fantastic.
Is that good enough?
That's good. We'll take that. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you're specific to us. We thought you were going to leave it open for 95 BFM.
Yes.
But now we can.
I can do a second one. Maybe after.
You can do it
right now, I think.
Yeah, you can.
I'm Wallace Chapman, and you're listening to 95 BFM Drive.
Okay.
Make of that what you will. Make
Fantastic.
It that way you will.
Now the purple one.
Yes. I mean, you guys interviewed one of the engineers of Prince, right? You know,
yes, Sylvia Massey.
And some great
pretty hedonistic stories came out of that.
Yeah, so some really cool. And I had the pleasure of interviewing an engineer called Susan Rogers, who was one of the engineers for Prince right through his his big years, including this album. And the thing that came through on Prince for me was that she said, you know, he was a great musician, but actually he wasn't perfect as well, you know. For example, his recording technique. Susan Rogers was the person who recorded Sign of the Times, and she said, so I was with him all day and all night, doing takes of things like Starfish and Coffee, And she said, if you go back and listen to that song, it's quite muffled. And I said to Prince through the glass wall, I said, Prince, it's quite muffled. He goes, yeah, but it's a good take, isn't it? And Susan, yeah, but it's technically it's not that great. And he said, who cares?
You know? I heard he does a lot of his vocals on a 57 at the desk, you know, so it's got to be pretty raw. I mean, he's used live takes.
Yeah, it's quite raw, but that goes to the genius of what an artist is. Mm. It's not about, we're not talking Steely Dan. Mm. We're talking about the genius of a person who's in the moment, you know.
Vibe.
Now, this track I'm going to play here is a track that was never put on an album because deemed too, I don't know, inoffensive, inappropriate or rude or whatever, but he did record it with George Clinton from Parliament and it's on Graffiti Bridge, and it is simply called We Can Fuck.
Wallace, thank you so much, mate.
Hey, thank you very much for coming in.
Guys, it's
an absolute pleasure.
You do a great show. You do a great show.
Right back at you.
You do a great show.
Actually, just everyone quiet.
You guys do a great show.
We can fuck. Oh.
Crude Fade coming up.
Ding. That was What's Cooking on 95 BFM.